Dedicated to the survival of American democracy in an increasingly dangerous world, this is Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney, acted as Assistant Secretary of Defense for International Security Policy under President Ronald Reagan, founder and president of the Center for Security Policy in Washington, D.C., the go-to man for defense and foreign policy issues, joined by the greatest minds in the security policy business, the special forces in the war of ideas at Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.
Welcome to Secure Freedom Radio. This is Frank Gaffney, your host and guide for what I think of as an intelligence briefing on the war for the free world. We are having a whole series of conversations with some very thoughtful people, very intelligent people, I think it's fair to say, joined at the moment at the Conservative Political Action Conference in the outskirts of Washington, D.C. We are joined by one of the preeminent among them, as far as I'm concerned. I call him the smartest man I know on our side in Washington these days. He is Richard Manning. His day job is the president of a terrific organization, Americans for Limited Government, but he publishes frequently at The Hill. He is widely sought after for his insights and commentary, and he is one great American. Rick, it's great to have you with us. Thanks for joining us.
You are so kind, Frank. Thank you very much.
It's all heartfelt, but more to the point, it's true. So, Rick, let's just start by asking the pregnant question. Is there a conservative movement? And if so, what is it?
Well, that is the real question, and I don't know if there is a conservative movement. I do know this. I know that there is a lot of people who are pulling oars and trying to get somewhere, but sometimes we're not pulling the oars in the same direction, and as a result, we end up going in circles. The conservative movement as a whole is unique in that it is individual-driven. We're entrepreneurs, we're individuals. We all have our own thoughts and are pushing for the right way for the country to move. And as a result, it's really difficult to get everybody together on the same song sheet on any given issue because there's, for every issue, there's as many opinions as there are people who voice them. But overall, I think the conservative movement is disorganized as always. Mm. And I don't know that it should be any other way, because the groupthink of the left does not spawn new ideas. It does not spawn great ideas. It doesn't spawn great people. And individual thought on the right spawns the creativity to be able to drive a 21st century America.
Picking up on this point, you are one of the thought leaders in the conservative movement, right? We're watching, of course, the challenge posed to many on the right by the evolving Trump presidency and positions the president has taken, most immediately on gun control. You were, at one point, a prominent figure in the dreaded National Rifle Association's lobbying operation. And so you know intimately the kinds of debates, the kinds of pressures, arguably never more intense than at the moment in the aftermath of the Parkland shooting last week. Sure. So walk us through what the conservative movement's position should be, as you see it, for example, on this issue of gun control and trying to keep our schools safe.
The conservative movement has to be a plumb line, of consistency, that individual rights are paramount. And if the conservative movement loses that, then the conservative movement has no right to exist. So ultimately, when you deal with a gun issue, there's lots of things that can be done that are smart. But gun control itself is not one of them. Because the fact is, no matter what measure you take, there'll always be another measure that needs to be taken until all guns are confiscated. Mm-hmm. Hillary Clinton made it clear that she wanted an Australian-style gun control, not realizing that people would know that meant confiscation of firearms. But that is where the left is going, and they won't stop until they get there. So no amount of middle grounding with them will cause them to go away. Here's some simple things that conservatives can come out for. They're very simple. When we've allowed a culture of death to engulf our society, what would you expect to happen? when you embrace a culture of death, you have to expect that kids who spend countless hours, days, weeks, years in a virtual reality environment killing people might confuse those who are mentally ill, might confuse the two, both reality and the virtual reality world.
The question actually occurs to me, is it possible that some people who aren't actually mentally ill are being so desensitized to this sense of right and wrong when it comes to mayhem and murder?
Yes, we
are also going to get this line wrong, too.
We see that all the time. It's a, you know, the fact is when people get, go in and they are involved in video games, particularly the more intense ones, it changes the way their synapses actually work together, the way their brains work. And when you take that and you divorce everything from a moral code of right and wrong, where you say that everything goes and there's no moral absolutes, so you don't train people about morality and moral absolutes on one side, and you desensitize them to killing other humans on another side, at that juncture, you're guaranteed to have a culture of death, and it would be shocking if it didn't show up in our children.
Yeah. Let me ask you about another piece of this, Rick, which, again, I know being a man deeply rooted in the conservative values imbued by our Constitution, what does it inevitably mean, having stopped teaching our Constitution, not just, you know, in law school, for heaven's sakes, but down to the grade school level, when we see students, for that matter, their parents, but particularly students now trotting out and with reasonable sanguinity, shall we say, dismissing rights that we have from God as defined by our founders in that Constitution. For example, the right to have this kind of conversation, the right to bear arms, and so on.
What we've devolved to is a system where kids are no longer taught that all men are created equal, endowed by their Creator with certain inalienable rights, among them life, liberty, pursuit, happiness. We no longer have that being taught and imbued as a core value. And by choosing as a state to not teach the underlying values of our country, we essentially are destroying the American culture.
Culture and the civilization.
And civilization.
Really?
When I was in school, they used to always tell us there is no American culture. And that was a lie. It was a lie from the beginning. And it was the beginning of the lie which they started to tell us there was no American culture worth defending. And now we're in a hyphenated America where there's no American culture because your culture is whatever the first word in your hyphen is, not the American word in your hyphen. And ultimately, unless we decide as a country to take our school systems back and teach American history and teach where we come from so our children know that and know why people go to war to fight for freedom, unless we do that, our country is gone. And it's inexcusable that we don't. The Republicans control 26 26 state houses. Those 26 state houses should make this job one, take control of our universities and under the control, and take control of the public schools.
Just very quickly, I know that you are, as I am, a very strong supporter of Jeff Sessions, our Attorney General. Your comment about that hyphenated thing calls to mind this recent hysterical response to his comments about the Anglo-American tradition of sheriffing, just as an example of what he's come in for. Talk about the man and why it's important to have him as our Attorney General.
Jeff Sessions is remains the only person who can do that job, and I will tell you just simply why. He is a man who believes in the rule of law. After 8 years of lawlessness under Obama and destruction of the rule of law, but we need somebody who's going to stand firm for the rule of law. That is painful to us when we like to see immediate gratification of having Hillary, you know, perp walked or various things like that. But the fact is there's a process, and he's trying to reestablish the process that protects all of our rights. That's why he's a great attorney.
And the Anglo-American tradition
of jurisprudence
is what he's following and thank God practicing as the Attorney General of the United States.
It's frustrating when our side practices and the other side doesn't, but we have to reestablish the rule of law.
Amen.
And if we choose not to, then we have no business blaming anybody else when they don't follow it.
A conservative value of the highest order. Rick Manning of Americans for Limited Government, I thank you so much for your time today, as well as all you do when you're not on the microphone with me, but come back to us again very soon.
Thanks, Frank.
Next up, we'll speak to the great Phil Haney, one of America's heroic former public servants and now patriotic teachers, right after this.
Visit us at facebook.com/securefreedom with Frank Gaffney. You're listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney from the nation's capital in Washington, D.C.
Welcome back. It's great to have with us one of my personal heroes, Phil Haney, a man who has served his country with great distinction, among other things, in the front lines of this war for the free world, at Customs and Border Protection. He is the author of an extraordinary account of his time there entitled See Something, Say Nothing. And it describes some really horrifying experiences that Phil was subjected to as he tried to protect our country against a phenomenon that we often describe here as Sharia supremacism. It's great to have him with us. He is just back from the front lines in, of all places, South Dakota. We'll talk a little bit about that. But Phil, I did want to just invite you to talk a little bit, as we're sitting here at the Conservative Political Action Conference, CPAC, about your insights into the state of this country from your travels, particularly in the aftermath of the publication of your terrific book, and continuing to the present moment.
Well, thank you. That's a great question, and segueing right from Richard Manning's comments and yours about the Constitution. And that is the, I would say, the element of the conservative movement that needs to be enhanced. The one thing, the one takeaway from 2+ years of traveling around the country is that we are not fluent in constitutional principles, and that the arguments and the premises and the positions that are taken by conservatives in forums across the country are seldom actually based on constitutional principle. So I've been advocating for all of us to become partisans, not partisans with R's or D's or I's after their name, but constitutional partisans, and literally saying that whatever premise or argument you make, you should be citing chapter and verse
grounded
from the Constitution.
Yeah.
That make you immovable.
And Phil, you were just making the point, which is so eminently sensible that it seems it would not need saying. And yet, as you've traveled around the country, you've obviously seen it's not just the left, but to some extent, even those on the right have lost their moorings in the Constitution of the United States.
Conservatives will tell you what they're fighting against. And whatever community of conservatives you're in, they'll have a specific area that they're fighting against. But very few can tell you what they're fighting for. And the most fundamental basis, and that is that we are fighting for our sovereignty. After all, the Constitution itself is just a legal brief on the rights that our Creator endowed us with, the unalienable rights of life, liberty, and pursuit of happiness. The Constitution and the Declaration simply describe those rights. And it also says in the Declaration that the Creator instituted government among men, to paraphrase, in order to preserve the rights that He so generously endowed us with. So doesn't it seem like we should all be familiar with the document that preserves our sovereignty?
But to some extent, that implies these days being self-taught. Because, as again, we were talking with Rick a moment ago, that's not necessarily something you're going to get even from a high-priced education at the university level, to say nothing of down in the grade school level. How could that be, Phil? Why is it that that is not part of the curriculum any longer, the Constitution of the United States?
It's a blind spot in our culture.
Is that all? I mean, isn't it really a reflection of what the left has done with its march through the institutions, they say?
Yeah, and that's part of the blind spot, is that we don't recognize that it was deliberate and intentional. We've been gradually led further and further away from the constitutional foundation, and now President Trump is being called a radical because he is allowing the checks and balances form of government that we were founded on to actually operate. Even though it's sometimes like watching sausage being made, his greatest legacy, I believe, when it's all said and done, will be that he allowed the government to go back to the checks and balances form and let the three branches operate. That wasn't the case in the last administration, and essentially, that's what got me in so much trouble.
Yeah, and the trouble, to be very brief about it, was
that I was contradicting the policies of the previous administration vis-a-vis protection of threat and counterterrorism. They chose to treat our enemies like our friends and our friends like our enemies.
Right.
And I stood opposed to that and took the hit for it.
And one of the enemies, as they saw it, was you, inside the government, trying to protect our borders, among other things, against these Sharia supremacists who clearly have in mind.
They must have thought so, because they
jihad.
Investigated me 9 times.
Yeah.
If they put half amount the energy into the jihadis and these Muslim Brotherhood front groups that I was targeting and watching, they probably would have shut some of them down.
Yeah, we'd be in better shape as
yes,
a country.
We would.
Well, speaking of not paying attention to what is coming into this country, Phil Haney, tell us about your experience yesterday in the Senate of the great state of South Dakota. What were you there to testify about, and what was the upshot of your experience?
Yes, I was invited to testify before the Senate committee at State of South Dakota in Pierre on Senate Bill 200, which was a simple 9-line bill to, let's just say, take a pause. We recognize that there are some flaws and gaps in the immigration system. Let's take a pause, let the system be improved before we let people in that we can't be certain. The 5 W's we say in intelligence: who, what, where, when, and why. We can't really be sure, because we don't have biometrics, date of birth and places of birth and family, those kind of things that are dependable from the countries that are also named in the executive order.
Yeah.
They don't have a functioning government.
So what is happening on the ground in South Dakota that prompted the introduction of this legislation?
Increase in crime and cost to the state in terms of supporting immigrants who don't assimilate. And so it was an effort to address that. And it was quite a lively debate in the Senate chamber. And the people that opposed the bill sent lobbyists for social service organizations talking about all of the benefits of bringing immigrants into, without actually ever addressing the most fundamental concept that it's the federal government's responsibility to provide a unified naturalization policy and prevent outbreaks of domestic violence at the state level. And they never addressed any of the constitutional principles, which just illustrates the point we were making earlier. Here you have in a debate in the Senate of a state trying to decide whether to slow down or put a pause on immigration, and they never addressed any of the constitutional principles involved with it. And I got the feeling, when I did introduce constitutional principles, that I was almost like speaking a different language.
Phil Haney, this is so troubling. The Senate did not, in fact, approve this legislation,
no,
as I understand it, which means that there will continue to be, presumably, a rapid growth in the number of foreign immigrants coming into that state, and its population, its native population, is so small that it won't take much for that to make a very profound demographic difference, will it not?
It's a little counterintuitive. You think it's a small state, so it's not that important, but it's actually one of the better indicators, because when you have a small population like that, the influences from the outside really become apparent.
We will be watching this closely, Phil Haney. I appreciate both your efforts around the country to raise the alarm of the dangers of losing our Constitution or a sense of its importance in our lives, and of bringing in people who are sworn as a matter of religious conviction to its replacement with Sharia, most especially. God bless you. Thank you for, among other things, see something, say nothing. God bless you. Come back to us again very soon.
Thank you very much.
Now more with Frank Gaffney.
Welcome back. It is with the greatest of excitement that I introduce, I believe for the first time, to our audience, Katie Hopkins, who has flown in from London, England, expressly for the purpose of joining us here at the Conservative Political Action Conference. I'm sure this audience, being as well-schooled as they are, knows all about you, but let me just say a few words. She is an award-winning documentary maker, a columnist for national papers in the UK, a radio talk show host, a best-selling author. What goodness else could I say? You can find all about her at HopkinsWorld.com and The Rebel Media, where she is currently holding forth with great effect on a number of things that I'm particularly keen to discuss, because as I'm often given to saying, what we're watching play out in Europe is exactly what the people perpetrating it have in mind for us. So it behooves us to pay attention. And one of the people trying to make sure we do and that we understand what we're seeing is our guest, Katie Hopkins. Thank you so much for joining us. We're so looking forward to having you on a platform with us this afternoon, but most especially having you on this platform, Secure Freedom Radio. Welcome.
Thank you very much indeed. And I really appreciate you guys having me. It's so wonderful being here. It's always wonderful being amongst like-minded people who, and it's not about some kind of political motivation even, it's just about belonging to a cause that seems just and proper, you know, surrounded by people who want the same thing, who want to work hard, who want to put in, not to take out, who essentially want to look after their families, love their children, work hard and do the best for their country. Those are the sorts of people I want to be around. That's what CPAC feels like to me. And I always describe it as kind of getting into a warm bath. Whereas being in the UK and certainly Western Europe is like standing under a cold shower. There's an endurance required to exist where I exist.
Indeed.
Here it's like getting in a warm bath. So I'm very grateful that I'm here.
Well, there's a lot of cold water outside of this particular conference, so you don't get too used to the comfort. But on the other hand, it is an important appreciation of what I think brings us together. And there are lots of differences. There are people of all different kinds of stripes in this hall at the moment, though they do have certain values that they share. And I just want you to talk with us a little bit based on not only what you've been chronicling in your various outlets in your own country, Katie Hopkins, but also what's been going on more broadly in Europe, again, that you have been documenting, that really speaks to how endangered those values are, how much at odds we would find ourselves, how cold the shower is, I guess.
Of course, absolutely. You know, I think one of the things that breaks my heart, I am, I guess, a quite accessible person. I have my email address out there. People email me with all sorts of, not so much their problems, they don't email me about their wall that's fallen down in their house, but they email me when they feel particularly that hope is lost. I get a lot of emails, you know, up to 1,000 a day from people in the UK and Western Europe, I would say, as a whole, particularly Jewish people or cultures that feel under threat, talking about what do they hold on to for hope when all hope seems to be lost and they feel attacked. There are so many places now in the UK. If I think about London, Londonistan, as I call it, there is a sense that that has been completely taken over. It's a separate place. I think the UK is broken down into two places. One is London, and the rest is a place called the rest of the UK. And the rest of the UK is filled with people that are my kind of people, normal people who just want to work hard, and who voted Brexit largely and feel like their voice is not heard because London attracts all the media, all the attention, and is spoken for by a handful of elites who don't reflect what the rest of the UK thinks. And I think we have a real parallel here in America. You know, if you spin the UK on its side, you've got New York and California. So we've got London and, say, Scotland, who have a completely different way of thinking than the majority of the population. Hence, you've got Trump, thank goodness. I think the other thing that's so upsetting People talk to me, do I think, you know, the takeover of the UK, bearing in mind that the Muslim population will overtake the Christian population or the resident population by 2050, the birth rate of Muslims will outstrip ours. So that is a very short time
frame. And that's
frame.
Without additional immigration, which is still...
Yeah. And today we had figures saying, you know, immigration is falling. That's official immigration figures. Mm. We've got a couple thousand arriving on a van every day. So those immigration figures are nonsense. But I think I also get a lot of emails from people, the elderly in particular, which I find very distressing, who say that they're 60, 70, 75. And whilst they see me and others fighting the good fight, they're glad that they'll be gone before they have to watch their country completely fall. I think that's very upsetting indeed. And I think that there are so many places now, no-go zones, where people like me, I mean, I would go, but people like me would not go. And on a daily basis that we feel pushed out from our country. And if you think about it as a mum, I'm a mum. I've got three children. They are 13, 12 and 9. You know, for a lot of mums and dads, they're doing a school drop and they're dropping their children at a school where 80%, 90% don't come from the UK, where English is a third language. So it goes Eritrean, Somali, and then English. Or it goes some form of Arabic, another Arabic variation, and then English. In some schools, it's 90%, where British has become a fifth language. And so their kids are going to school with that every day. That's every morning when you do that school run. Yeah. Or if you need to get a doctor's appointment, you know, those mornings where something's gone on overnight, you've had a night of worry, you pick up the phone, you need to ring your doctor. People imagine our nationalised healthcare system of some sort of panacea. You ring the doctor and there's no appointments. There's no slots. There's no way. There's no one you can see. And it doesn't matter if it's an appointment for me. I don't care. If it's an appointment for your child, right. You feel forced out. Right. And that's very much day-to-day in the UK.
So this is, if I can put it in
of
slightly
course.
Different terms, this is the combined effect of the left and their socialist paradise and the Sharia supremacists, for want of a better term,
absolutely.
That are transforming your country. And you've documented, I just want to salute you for your courage in going into places like Calais, to watch those vans being filled up so that they can bring the thousands across surreptitiously, or going into Sweden, into Malmo, in places where, you know, rape is now epidemic.
Absolutely.
White women of Swedish extraction primarily being the victims at the hands of people who aren't, let's say, be clear.
One of the things that surprises me, you know, as somebody going out to Calais, I went to live in the jungle camp for 2 days. I went to Sweden to walk the no-go zones and look at the suburbs.
And there's no question that they exist.
There's no question. But in a way, I even went, you know, I do go open-minded. I go looking to see people, meet people, find out what the truth is. But, you know, within 10 minutes of being inside the jungle camp in Calais, which is where the migrants come and they kind of collect before they make their last desperate dash to the UK, within 10 minutes, men were running at me, tacky, 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 tacky. I thought it meant lunch. I thought it was a rush for the lunch queue. Such was my naivety. Tacky means truck. And what they meant was the trucks, and I could see them on the horizon behind the fencing, were backed up. And when those trucks back up, that's when they can go for it. They went for it. They swarmed towards those fences. They cut through. The French police came with tear gas firing. The migrants aren't bothered by tear gas. That doesn't stop them. They cut through that fence. My photographer, who I was with, did a great job. But he was taken. His kit was taken. His wallet was taken. His phone taken. And he was given a good hiding. And eventually we were put in a van and thrown out.
Yeah.
He was dispatched back to the UK. And I went back for a second day. And the same in Sweden, you know. I arrived there thinking I would look for a story, talk to people. Within an hour of being in Sweden, the roads were fenced off and someone had planted a bomb, a hand grenade, as it turned out, in a waste paper basket outside the police station. And I give these examples not as the nature of the drama of these countries, but more to indicate you only have to walk amongst it for a moment, and you see the chaos that we've created.
Hold the thought. We have to pause for just a second. Katie Hopkins is our guest. She is with the Rebel Media. Her clarity on these issues is so important, and we'll talk more about some of her insights and what's at stake if the United States loses this path that we have been on in favor of the one that her country is now well down, right after this.
Go to securefreedomradio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio. Go to securefreedomradio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
We're back. We are having a second segment with our guest, Katie Hopkins, whose abilities to articulate the challenges of our time are, well, second to none, I think. She usually does it in colorful and sometimes comedic ways. We're getting a serious download here, however, because the topic, her warning, her message is very serious. So I appreciate you being with us, Katie, and
thank you. And
wanted to just pick up on sort of what you were describing from your exploits in Europe, and the unmistakable impression that it's very late there for freedom.
Yes.
Is it too late? Is all hope lost at this point? Would you say
it is too late in the sense that from the perspective of births and the overtaking of my culture by a new culture, the fact that by 2050 there will be more Muslim births than there will be any other in Western Europe and in the UK, you know, that is too late. The trajectory is set. And the hope I have is that the growth in certain parties, so for example in Germany, the AfD is performing spectacularly well at the moment, coming second, and that's very much a pushback to Angela Merkel and her Wir schaffen das, we can do this, welcoming all migrants. And if I may just sort of wrap up on this, you know, having spent time traveling the routes from Libya across the Med to Sicily to southern Italy with those migrants who then I tracked to the camp at Calais where I stayed with them, the one thing you take away, and same in the Swedish suburbs and in the suburbs of Paris, of course, where we see the attacks happening now, the thing you take away is migrants do not leave their old battles behind. You imagine people come for a new life, a new start, as if they're kind of washed and cleansed and new. That isn't the case. The Eritreans come and they still hate the Somalis. And the Somalis live in the Somali quarter. And the Afghanis go to the Afghani quarter and they don't speak to the Eritreans who hate the Somalis. All those old conflicts from their old lands, we import those conflicts with the migrants.
Yeah.
And that's really one of the key messages I've learned.
The other piece of it, though, isn't it? Is that they will set aside, just as Sunnis and Shia do, their mutual and often very deeply felt animosities in order to make common cause against us. And I guess that's what I really want to tease out with you, because you've been reporting on this, you've been documenting it, you've been vilified for doing so, heavens knows, most of us are, but you've been truth-telling about it, and I just want you to describe, if you could, if it is too late for Europe, what is the message to Americans, particularly at the Conservative Political Action Conference, but also to the larger audience we're addressing?
Yeah, the message, my key message to America is not to become like Western Europe. Do not become us. Do not fall in the way that we've fallen. You know, that's my message. And it doesn't come from a place of bitterness. And it doesn't come from a place of hating my country. I love my country. I went to Sandhurst because I wanted to be in the military to fight for my country. And in a way, I guess that's what I think I do now, is fight for my country in a different way. But my message to Americans as well is that you can do something still. So all hope for you is not lost. One, you have Trump, and that's an amazing thing. You have a man who stands there and says, we will put Americans first. And I hold on to that every day. The second thing for me that Americans can do is always question, you know your truths and stand for your truths. So when you have so many people coming here and they want to build another mega mosque and they want to impose more Sharia law, they want to have more of their Muslim traditions protected, ask yourself, why is it? If Islam is so fantastic, why is it that Muslims always come and flee and escape and look for refuge in Christian countries? Ask that question and keep asking that question, because I think it helps sort of keep us sort of firmly rooted in our truths, which is that the reason you come is because our Christian traditions enable you to live in a tolerant place. Do not take away those traditions because we enabled you to come to enjoy them.
Let me push back on that, because my guess is that it's dangerous to generalize, of course. There are unquestionably people who are coming seeking refuge, who are coming, I think indeed the history of sort of the emigration from these Sharia dominated lands in this country is most in the past, at least, certainly the first generation came here to get away from Sharia.
Of course.
Here's my concern, though, Katie, and that is that I think if you look at the traditions of Sharia, in fact, the express direction deemed to come from Allah is that you are to make the hijrah, you are to spread the faith. So it's not so much coming because it's a tolerant place, your duty is to turn it into an intolerant place.
Totally.
And I just wonder if in your travels, in your first-hand observation of it, that's not at least at work.
Of course. And I think of my friends in Golders Green. You know, some Americans will know, I'm sure, identify with the Jewish community in Golders Green. I'm just taking that as one example. It's just outside of London. And it's been known forever as a Jewish community. It's a fabulous place. It's a vibrant place. It's welcoming. It's not at all closed off. But it's very much a community where, particularly if you are more orthodox in nature, or you want to live a certain way, you're very much amongst people who also want to live that way. And it's always been that way. Only a couple months ago, a building in Golders Green was it wasn't allowed to be a use transformation, the transformation of use of this old building, but it was, and it has now become a mosque. And that's what alarms me, is why, unless you were making a particular statement, would you plant a mega mosque in the centre of a traditional Jewish community? And the people that contact me again on email and calling me were people that were alarmed for their children because they believe this is another way of trying to get amongst their community and then take over. So it isn't that sense of arriving, it's taking over.
Well, and we're seeing large numbers of Jews leaving the country, aren't we? And not just yours, but throughout Europe. They fortunately still have places to go. And one of the things that's so concerning is if we don't learn the lessons that you're trying to help us understand, and courageously doing so, we really do risk the possibility that there's no place else to go.
Of course. And I think the thing that really concerns me is the flow of money behind this, of course. Money behind the Muslim takeover, as I see it, my words. The money is significant. It is substantial. It allows them to fight court cases, to sue people that disagree with them, to wreak havoc. That flow of money also builds that power behind them. But I still say, and this goes back to being a mother, you know, my school had their third trip to a mosque last year. So when we haven't visited a church, we haven't visited a synagogue, in which case that's fine by me. We do one of each. I understand that. We're learning. It's the third trip to a mosque. So my children no longer go on trips to the mosques until, I've written a letter to the head teacher, until we go to visit a synagogue or a church or any other place of worship. I don't mind where it is. And I think as parents, we can take steps to say, I understand where you're pushing us, but I'm not going to be pushed by you. I'm going to stand strong. And that's kind of my other message to Americans, is resist the narrative. Resist being told that the third trip to the mosque is necessary.
And sadly, the trouble is, I'm afraid, and this is a subject for a much longer conversation, which I hope we will be able to have with you in the near future, Katie Hopkins. But the sad truth of it is, what you're describing is part of what has been expressly described as civilization jihad by the Muslim Brotherhood. The use of institutions that have penetrated and subverted, like our educational system, for the purpose of brainwashing and destroying Western civilization from within. You are standing up against it. Again, I salute you for doing so.
Thank you
for sharing your insights with us, and pray that we will hear a lot more from you in these conversations here at CPAC, as well as, of course, on this program in the days
ahead. Thank you very much indeed for your
time.
I appreciate it.
God bless you, Katie Hopkins. Thank you.
From the nation's capital, you've been listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.